Welcome back, everybody, to the Best Seat at the Track, the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Davey Siegel, and we got Eric Jones on the show with us today. No, he's not a playoff driver this year, but that doesn't mean he still can't contend for wins, and he has got a lot of stuff cooking. So we talked to Eric about his new bunny, his new foundation, his new contract, and everything in between. Plus, we got my trusty compadre, Zach Sterniolo. We'll talk some Daytona, we'll talk some Darlington, and we'll do it all right now.
Buggity, buggity, buggity! Let's go racing, boys!
Green flag is out on the podcast this week. The Daytona International Speedway as the regular season finale was exactly as advertised. Chaotic, entertaining, wild. What say you, Zach?
It has delivered two times in a row. 2 years now we've had Daytona as the regular season finale, and I have been totally thrilled and totally satisfied every each of these last 2 years. We're getting the drama. We've got people who are kind of on the bubble, who are leading the race, guys who are outside that bubble, all of a sudden giving themselves a chance to make these playoffs. Yeah, there was some calamity, but I don't think it was a mess. I know we had a couple big pileups late, but yeah. I don't think it was ugly by any means, especially for a super speedway race. And then we see Ryan Blaney end up going for back-to-back wins. All in all, I think Daytona delivered yet again.
So we had this debate last week on the show, and I think I've talked at length with a lot of different people about it. But is this a good venue to host the regular season finale? You know, my perspective on it was, no, I don't like it. It's too much of a luck-based track, and what other people do can affect you. So this should not be a playoff cutoff race or a cutoff to get into the playoffs. But then I thought, okay, that's not the case, because you had 25 weeks before Daytona to lock yourself in with the win or position yourself well points-wise like Tyler Reddick did. So you shouldn't be mad that Daytona is the last chance. It's exactly that, the last chance. I have a feeling that you feel similarly.
I do, and I think I would be more skeptical about the decision to move Daytona to the last race of the regular season if it was adding a super speedway to the regular season. But we're not doing that. This race has always been in the regular season. It's just been mid-July. It's been early July. It's been July 4th weekend. So this race has always existed in the regular season. All this does now is it puts more emphasis on, okay, you know what? You had those 25 weeks. You had the Daytona 500. You had Talladega. You had every other race in the regular season. Now we'll give you one more shot. Here you go. End of August. You've got a shot. If you're 29th in points, if you go ahead, win this race, you're in. Go ahead and give yourself a shot.
Yeah.
And so I think this is the right move. I think it has worked. It hasn't been a disaster. I don't think we're seeing team orders come into play in any weird ways. Like we've seen at Richmond in the past. I think Daytona works. I think Daytona works and the competitors make it work.
Yeah. I think NASCAR hit a gold mine here, just from, again, like an entertainment perspective, right? And say what you want about the package and the sport and the integrity, whatever. Sports are entertainment. Sorry to hate to break it to you, but they're in it for entertainment, and they do it because they make money. They also like it, but that's the crux of the issue here. So regardless of what you think about the racing at Daytona, regardless of what you think about any other super speedway racing in general, they did this because it's entertaining. And that's exactly what the fans got. That's exactly what the drivers provided. Although I was a little bit surprised because most of the drivers didn't seem to be a big fan of the little tweaks that they made to the Super Speedway package. You know, everybody basically was saying on TV they couldn't really tell that it was 8 to 10 miles an hour slower. I couldn't. You couldn't. But the drivers inside the cockpit said that the runs were different. They had to get used to them a little bit more. And they were not huge fans of it. I found that a little bit interesting.
I found it interesting, too, especially because it looked like it was kind of, I don't want to say an old school super speedway race, but it did kind of have some hints of maybe like mid 2010s super speedway packages. I mean, we saw Joey Logano put on a clinic and blocking both lanes toward the end of stage two in order to that stage win. And we haven't really seen someone be able to fend off both lanes throughout the course of a green flag stretch in a while there. So I felt like the runs, yeah, you still were able to get runs and you still got to the back bumper of the guy in front of you, but it didn't seem nearly as exaggerated as what we saw at Talladega, let's say, in the spring, nor even at the Daytona 500. And because of that, we still saw a wreck, of course, with due to blocking when Elliott went up to block the Benedetto there in turns three and four. But I feel like you were able to make those blocks slower and a little bit more deliberately without the fear of, okay, if I turn the wheel right here and get in front of this guy, I'm going around.
Yeah, I found it interesting their perspective on it, and I'm not, who am I to critique them and be like, no, you're wrong. You know what I mean? I mean, they're in the driver's seat, but I'll tell you one thing. Ryan Blaney, he's coming on strong. I mean, you want to talk about momentum. This boy, he got it. I mean, he had never had a multiple win season coming into the year. He wins at Michigan, gets his second win of the year, turns right around the next week, wins at Daytona. He's got three wins now, two in a row, heading into the playoffs. In a round that admittedly he has not been a fan of, and it's not his best tracks, but now that he's padded playoff points, I think he's got 19 points above the cutoff right now. He's got to be feeling pretty good, especially with a crew chief like Todd Gordon, who knows is going out at the end of the year, wants to go out on top, and has a championship under his belt. I'm buying Ryan Blaney stock right now, even though it may be a little bit expensive.
I am too. I'm still concerned for him a little bit at Richmond. I know he ran better there this year than he has.
He hates that.
He's terrible. Terrible. He still has not gotten a top 10 in 10 starts at Richmond. Darlington is another bad track for him, but had a decent run there in the spring this year. Finally got his first top 10 there, finished eighth. Before that, he hadn't finished any better than 13th. So at Bristol, on the other hand, a good track for him, but that didn't save him last year because Darlington and Richmond were just so bad that he couldn't do anything to get himself out of the first round. He's got cushion this year. I think that's going to come hugely into play, into his benefit here. Even if you have a bad week at Richmond, I think he's going to run well enough at Darlington and Bristol where he doesn't have to worry about that. We talk about momentum a lot in the sport. I don't necessarily know if you can quantify what momentum means, but he's got as much as he could possibly have coming into this playoffs when really, you know, if we looked at this a month ago, we would have said Kyle Larson was the guy coming in with a whole head of steam.
Yeah. It's interesting because everybody's always like, well, you want momentum. I don't know how to get it. I don't know what it is necessarily, but when you got it, you know you got it. So
right. You're
right on that. I want to also, I mean, we'll talk about the playoffs later on once we talk to Eric Jones and after that, but got to talk about Colic Racing. My God. I mean, I tweeted after the race and you agreed with me that their teamwork and their dedication to working with each other. I don't know if it stems from Chris Rice. I don't know if it stems from the culture at large, but the culture at large probably stems from Chris Rice. But it gives me DEI vibes from the early 2000s when they are so committed to working with each other. And if one of them can't win the race, then they're going to do everything in their power to help the other guy win the race. Justin Haley wins his fourth Super Speedway win, first win of the season. Colic finishes 1, 2, 4. They come across the line three wide, side by side by side. That's a picture that you're going to blow up. You're going to put on top of the shop. You're going to put it on your screensaver. Matt Colic had to be doing backflips after that race. It's unreal how well they work together.
It's a masterclass in teamwork. And it's teamwork that you don't get to see in motorsports almost ever. I mean, yes, we've seen in Formula One, you know, team orders there, and there's an A car and a B car. At Colic Racing, it's those three cars want to come across the line, 1, 2, 3, no matter what that order is, and the drivers are selfless enough that they're willing to, they don't care where they fall in that pecking order. As long as they or their teammates end up in victory lane and the other two are on the podium, they're content with that. And when you look at what they're doing on the super speedways, it really is amazing how they're able to just find each other, whether it's at the front of the field, kind of maybe back toward the top 10, they always find a way to find each other and push each other to the front of the field.
Yeah.
You know, the DEI thing, it's such a perfect analogy to me because you look at, it's such a shame that we only got to see it between Earnhardt Sr., Earnhardt Jr., and Waltrip just for the one race. and that 2001 Daytona 500. But the way that they found each other and made sure that each of those three drivers were at the front of the field on the white flag lap, it's exactly what I feel like we're seeing with Colic Racing. And it's Daytona and Talladega race one after the other. They always find a way. And I don't know. I don't know how to. You just have to sit back and appreciate what they're doing, because it's so hard at these racetracks when one false move just completely destroys a pack. I mean, we saw Myatt Snider end up, getting into the back of Austin Cindric early in that race, caused a big crash, took cars out. Any one of those cars could have been the Colic cars, but they always find a way to stay out of trouble and find each other at the front of the field.
It's amazing. It really is. And I know there's been different iterations of super speedway racing, when there's been the slingshot era and there was the tandem era and there's the different pack eras. But I would honestly put Justin Haley on my Mount Rushmore right now. And sure, it's recency bias, but I mean, you got Denny Hamlin on there, you got Dale Sr., Dale Jr., and I mean, it's premature, I understand, but the guy's so damn good at Dega and Daytona. And oh, by the way, I know it was fluky and it was luck and it was rain, but he won a cup race. So, like, this guy is so good on super speedways. I expect him to be the favorite at Talladega when the Xfinity Series goes back there. I expect him to run well next season in a full-time chartered Spire car in the Daytona 500. I don't think that would be out of the realm of possibility, because we've seen this happen time after time after time. I wonder from his perspective, and maybe we can get him on in the coming weeks to ask him, but what makes him so good there? Like, is it the car? Is it his skill set? What is it? Because it seems like certain guys get it and certain guys don't.
And he is certainly someone who gets it. He'll be in that chartered Colic car next year. Spire did get a charter, it sounds like, overnight. But Colic fielding him in that 16 car full time in 2022, it's going to be interesting to see what he's able to do in that car, because that's three races during the regular season that he's going to be able to find a playoff berth if he's able to get up there and contend. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens with Haley. And I don't know what it is about his ability to work the super speedways so well, but I mean, he did it in the Truck Series. He did it in the Xfinity Series. He's shown really good runs in the Cup Series up there as well. Yes, he won the Lightning Strike race.
He got a top 10 though on Sunday or Saturday night.
Exactly what I was going to say. I mean, he finds his way up toward the front of these fields and finds a way to be there at the checkered flag. It's going to be really interesting to see what he's capable of on the super speedways as these packages evolve.
Well said. Nothing more to add there. Let's get a quick stage break out the way, Zach, and we'll come back and talk to Eric Jones. Sound good to you?
Sounds great.
This week's stage break is unsponsored, but if you would like to hop on board with the Front Stretch podcast, it is so easy to do so. All you got to do is hit up sales@frontstretch.com, S-A-L-E-S, at frontstretch.com, and check out what advertising opportunities are available to you, whether it's on this very podcast, whether it's on some video content, some weekly columns and articles, race recaps, race previews, fantasy sports, anything in between. Myself, Zach Sterniolo, our wonderful Boston compadre, Tom Bowles. Advertising's wide open, so hit us up, see what we can do for you and what you can do for us. sales@frontstretch.com. Let's throw it over to our chat with Eric Jones of Richard Petty Motorsports. He's got his plans for next year set in stone. He's got a foundation that is now off the ground and running, and he most importantly has a new addition to the Eric Jones family. I will let you guys hear for yourself. Here's our conversation with Richard Petty Motorsports wheelman, Eric Jones. Pleasure to welcome on to the show this week, Eric Jones, driver of the 43 Chevrolet for Richard Petty Motorsports, of course. He's got his 2022 plans set. He's got a new foundation announced. So let's start with the most important news out there, Eric. How the heck is your new cute bunny? Because that's all I want to know about.
He's good. He came home, I guess, a couple of days ago now, but been good. Been building a little house for him outside and getting him ready to go. But he's been inside right now, enjoying it, and then and running around and checking everything out. But he's been good.
His name's Biscuit, right?
Biscuit, that's right.
Does Biscuit Jones kind of sound like an old baseball player from like the 20s or 30s to you? Because it does to me.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I could see that happening.
Yeah, yeah. How is Oscar adjusting to having a new stepbrother in the house? Is he okay?
He's been good. He really wants him to play with him. But, you know, I think the rabbit's probably a little bit nervous of Oscar still. But he's warming up to him. He's getting better with him. And he's less and less nervous. But Oscar's definitely, he's very curious right now.
I love it. I'm sure he is. I would be too if I was a dog and I see this new bunny coming into my life. I know, I mean, we're going to talk about your love of animals with the foundation and everything, but what inspired you to get a bunny? Is it just too cute to handle?
You know, Holly, my girlfriend, was really wanting an animal and was looking at the rabbits and ended up finding some. And we ended up going and getting one, convincing me to get one. So that's kind of how the bunny came around.
I love it. So all kidding aside, Eric, I know that the big news on track specifically is you returning to RPM for next season. It's a big deal. I'm sure it is for you to get that out of the way, to get those plans set in stone for the team as well. Why did this move make sense for you? Why did it make sense for RPM? It seems like it was more so a formality of just going through the contract negotiations, but it didn't really seem like you wanted to go anywhere else.
No, I think, you know, looking at next year and with the next gen car, I thought it was important just to stay with a group that I'd already, you know, known a bit. And at least when we go to this new race car, and it's a pretty clean slate for everybody. I'm working with a group of guys that I'm familiar with. So obviously there's going to be a huge building process and a big learning process for drivers, for teams, for crew chiefs of getting used to this car. At least we've all, you know, worked together. So that's going to make things a little bit simpler, I think, going forward. But, you know, just been enjoying building with them and working with them each week and trying to get better. And so just coming back for next season, you know, for me, made a lot of sense.
So people obviously associate RPM with the King, as they should. And he's at the track a fair amount, especially for his age. He's doing great. How often is he at the shop? How often do you guys converse? Because I'm sure that he's very in tune with the team, but maybe not what he once was.
Yeah, he really is he's there every week. You know, I he's up at the shop every week. Sometimes I catch him, sometimes I don't. I'm there every week, so it just depends on kind of how our paths end up crossing, I guess, what time we're up there. But yeah. I do see him quite a bit and get to hang out and spend some time with him. So he's really involved still. I mean, still really curious about the team. Him and Dale Inman both, you know, really are involved with the race team and what goes on day to day. And so that's always cool to see. You know, it's just they want to see us do well, and they want to see us run well and want to do whatever they can do to help. But yeah, Richard, he's up there every single week up at the shop, at least checking in one time.
I love it. You mentioned the next gen car and why that's kind of a big factor in terms of staying with RPM for next year. Seeing that you guys are not in the playoffs this year, unfortunately, when does the focus shift from performing in 2021 to prepping for 2022, getting inventory, doing some testing with the next gen car, or has that already started?
You know, it's already started a bit. We have a car currently, a next gen car, and some parts and pieces. So we've started to get that process rolling. You know, it's kind of, it's interesting, right? It's going to be a different deal for us, you know. So normally getting the cars from RCR and doing it that way, now we just get the chassis and kind of build it. So yep. It's interesting, but you know, we do have a car and inventory, and we're starting to work on that. I'm trying to think. I think the first test is, you know, Phoenix, maybe just after the season ends. There may be one before that, but you know, excited just to get tested. I haven't drove that car in almost, you know, coming up on 2 years in a few months at Homestead. So it's going to be a lot different than the last time I drove it.
Yeah, when you did drive it, I'm sure it's different now, like you said. But any big takeaways that you remember from that time in the car? Because Christopher Bell a couple weeks ago said that it's pretty much different in every single facet, and you can really feel it, like the tires specifically. You can feel how different it drives.
Yeah, I mean, I drove it there at Homestead, so it was, you know, I felt like you kind of ended up struggling with similar stuff as what you normally do at Homestead. Right. With the current car, that's just kind of that track. It'd be interesting to drive it at a place like Bristol, because it would be a lot different than the current car, I think. So I'm excited just to get it on really some short tracks and some road courses to see how it does there. Cause I think that's where you're going to notice the big difference. I think the mile and a half, there's going to be quirks and things that are unique to the car that aren't, you know, what we have with our current car. It was definitely challenging, on entry of the corner. That's the biggest thing I noticed. There was just nothing to lean on like we have with our current car. The entry was really free, and it was really challenging to eat it in there and stay stable. So I don't know. It's different. The changes you were making are totally different. It's not like the changes you'd make with the current car. So you're going to have to kind of relearn that in your mindset. But, you know, that test was honestly more of a, just a systems check and a durability test. We're just trying to get laps on the car and just get miles on it.
Yeah. Speaking of changes, another question about moving to RPM from JGR back before you got here. I'm curious what the biggest change for you this year has been. Has it been, you know, recalibrating expectations and saying, okay, like, we're not going to have race winning speed every week, so we're going to have to adjust what we deem a successful weekend? Has it been getting to know your crew chief, getting to know the team? What's been the biggest adjustment or change for you this year?
You know, I think the biggest thing was just new people. You know, I mean, I was at JGR there for essentially since 2015, right? You know, with Xfinity and then on to Cup and new. Even when I went from Xfinity to Cup, there were so many people I still knew. You know, I was dealing with the same people in the upper management, and I was dealing with a lot of even the same people on the race team that had moved from Xfinity up to Cup. So I dealt with the same people for 5 or 6 years. And then, you know, going to RPM, it was a whole new group of people, obviously at RPM. And then with the alliance with, excuse me, RCR, trying to learn those people and who was in charge there and who did what. So that was probably the biggest change, just working with that, just meeting everybody and trying to new, you know, put names with faces. And then obviously within my own group, you know, gelling with the team and getting to know everybody and just build that relationship.
It seems like from the outside, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, JGR, obviously it's a high pressure environment, four teams, hundreds of employees, performance driven, right? And that's not to say that RPM isn't, but it seems like you seem a bit happier, like from the outside, just the interactions that we have in the media, talking to you on Zoom and seeing you at the track when we can. It seems like you're in a bit of a better headspace this season, which is interesting because, as I mentioned, from the outside, one would say, well, going from JGR to RPM, you know, you're not going to be contending for race wins every week. But at the end of the day, that's not the end all be all. It seems like you're a little bit happier this season. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I'm just more comfortable in the situation that I'm in. I feel like I have more more control over my destiny and kind of what's going on, and just the people that I'm working with are good relationships and good people, and just get along really well with everybody and gel really well with everybody. So, you know, the pressure I think is still there, but that's probably from just me. I want to go out and run well and do well each week and want to get better. But, you know, I definitely feel probably more comfortable in my situation now than what I was. So, that's, you know, that's something that's worth, it's worth something in life, you know, just being happy and being comfortable. Yeah. And I'm definitely feeling that way where I am right now.
Oh, that's great to hear. And it definitely is worth something. Not to get ahead of our skis, but I assume signing for next year, you want to build long-term with this team. I don't assume that you have plans of going anywhere else.
Yeah. I mean, that's the goal, you know, with the next gen car, that was really kind of what I was looking for and forward to when I originally went to RPM. I knew this year would be challenging just because it's the parts freeze and we didn't have any notes, we didn't have any practice. So I knew there was going to be challenging times and weeks through this season, but, you know, I was really just hanging on the next gen car and trying to get done for 2022 and signed for that and just start working on that. You know, that's going to be back to practice and, you know, you can work on the thing again. Obviously there's not parts development. Car kind of is what it is, essentially. But, you know, you do have a blank space to work from, and that's going to give us, you know, a little bit more level playing field with everybody.
It'll be nice to have practice and qualifying back. I'm sure that you're going to enjoy that as well, being able to tinker and adjust on the car. Let's talk about the Eric Jones Foundation, the formation of that, going back a couple weeks to your home track of Michigan. Awesome, awesome stuff. When I was reading the release and checking out the website, it warmed my heart because it's awesome stuff. And, you know, knowing you for as long as we have in the NASCAR world, it's the three things that we know about you off track, which is children's reading, early cancer detection, and promoting animal welfare. Just as a 30,000 foot view type of question, how good did it feel to finally get this out, get this launched? Because I'm sure behind the scenes, it was a lot of work behind the scenes to try to make this what it is.
Yeah, there was, you know, a number of people involved, obviously beyond myself, of getting the foundation off the ground and getting the announcement set up and getting everything done there. You know, there's a lot that goes into a foundation, you know, outside of just obviously saying, hey, we have a foundation, this is it. There's a lot of things on the backside that you have to get done to make sure, you know, your foundation's legit and it's a real thing. And it's, you know, it's nonprofit. You're taking in money to donate it and make, you know, make the world a better place, essentially, at the end of the day. And for me, it was just kind of, like you said, things that I've focused on now the last 4 or 5 years of my career and donating to and supporting causes are what essentially became my foundation. So that was the cool part for me. It's been something that I've been wanting to do. And finally, I was in a spot where I thought I had the right people around and was in the right position to do something with it. So it just excited going forward, what the possibilities are. You know, it's really, there is no limit to how big the foundation can be, essentially. And it can grow outside just the world of NASCAR. And that's my goal, you know, is to continue to grow this foundation into something that is bigger than myself and what I do in racing, and just be able to have a broader reach across those three platforms.
Yeah, well, you're off to a great start. And the reaction that I've seen has been overwhelmingly positive from the industry, but I'm sure that you've gotten some texts, phone calls, tweets from people outside of the industry saying, wow, this is awesome. I love what you're doing. So the reaction from you, obviously, once you get it off the ground, okay, phew, we got it going. And now all the positive reaction coming in, it's got to make your heart feel good too.
It does. You know, it's been cool to see just the people reaching out wanting to help, you know, and so many people from, not like you just said, not just only in the industry, but people that I know outside of it and are in different parts and facets of the world. And they're reaching out, wanting to help, wanting to know what they can do to donate and assist with the foundation. So that's been really fun, you know, just hearing from those people and working with it and trying to figure out, you know, what the next move is, how to grow it, get it bigger. And that's going to be a fun journey. It's kind of uncharted territories for me a little bit. I'm not big in the foundation world and don't know a ton about it, but have some good people that are part of the foundation that really do. So it's cool to hear their plans and views and kind of where we can go from here.
Playoffs are beginning this weekend. You obviously know how to get around Darlington. You know, you've done that a time or two pretty well, and you know what it's like to be in the playoffs, but it may take a little bit of adjustment to know how to race the playoff guys being outside of the playoffs. Have you thought through that at all? And do you expect to race the playoff contenders any differently than you normally would?
Well, you know, it's always a challenge, right? And I've been in a situation where I've been in the playoffs and raced against guys that weren't. And so I think I have a good view of that. But, you know, I don't think through much of the playoffs you can really race them too much different. You know, I think at Phoenix there's a respect level you have to give those four guys going for the championship. But, you know, here early on, obviously you don't want to do anything to hinder them. I'm not going to intentionally go out and ruin some guy's day, you know, just because he's in the playoffs, but yeah, you know, I still got to race and do, I think Darlington's a great opportunity for us to go run well. We had a good car there in the spring, had a flat tire and ended up not getting quite where we could have finished, but had a top 10 car. So, you know, I think this race has always been better for me too, is where it starts in the day and then goes tonight has always been, you know, my strength at that place. So, hopefully we have a good car and we're just racing with them. You know, if we're racing with a lot of those guys, that means we're having probably a pretty good day. So yeah, hope we're up there racing with them, contending with them.
Last thing for me, can I please try to get you to convert to a Spartan? Because I ask you every single time, and I called you out because Byron is closer to East Lansing than it is to Ann Arbor. But I assume that you're still a Wolverine.
I am. Yeah. I've never been to the stadium, but I've been to Lansing quite a bit. I used to race over there, actually, go-karts, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think I'm set in stone these days. It's been a long time I've been a Wolverine fan.
I know. You and Brad. I feel like I need one, so I got to try.
Yeah, I don't think – maybe Brad you can convert, but not, I don't think it's going to happen with me.
Yeah, he's got a lot on his plate right now. I'll let him marinate on the Roush Fenway stuff, but – I don't know. Maybe next time we talk, I'll get you out to a game. We'll go to the Big House or Spartan Stadium, and we'll see some action. But it's been fun catching up with you, man. As always, really appreciate you. Appreciate your time. And, again, the stuff you're doing with the foundation is awesome. Really, really cool. So we're looking forward to see how that plays out in the coming months. And best of luck the rest of the season. Hopefully see you running up front with those playoff guys.
Sounds good. Thanks, man.
White Flag is out on the podcast this week. Huge thank you to Eric for his time on a busy week, obviously not in the playoffs, but still super, super busy guy. A Cup Series driver, no matter how you slice it, they're always busy. And thank you to Courtney, of course, of Richard Petty Motorsports for helping coordinate that conversation. Your efforts are so greatly appreciated. And Eric, your time is so greatly appreciated. I don't know if I'm ever going to get him to convert from a Wolverine fan to a Spartan fan, Zach, but I have to try. It's in my blood, you know?
It is indeed in your blood. I don't think you're going to succeed on that one, considering you know, he's the one who was like born and raised in Michigan. So like
I called him out because Byron is closer to East Lansing than it is Ann Arbor. And I called him out on it multiple times, but he said that he's pretty much too far gone. And he said, maybe I can ask Brad, but I said that Brad has a lot of stuff going on right now. So I don't know. I think I'm done.
Listen, college football rivalries are hard, mm-hmm. die hard.
Yes, they are. All right. White flag is out. As I said, Darlington is on deck. Let's talk playoffs. Zach, you're going to be on the road here shortly. I guess I should say in the air and then on the road. To the Lady in Black, the track too tough to tame, Darlington Raceway. By the way, I've never been there as a media member, but be careful driving down there because I've heard that the speed traps in the local counties are ruthless. So be sure to be careful.
Thankfully, I've listened to enough like Door Bumper Clear and Jeff Buck's podcast to know I've got to be real mindful in a couple spots in South Carolina driving down there. But I'm so excited. I've never been able to get down to Darlington beforehand. So really, really looking forward to this weekend, especially to be able to go cover a Crown Jewel event like this.
Yeah. The track, from what I remember, I actually went there for the first ever throwback weekend with my dad. It was a pretty cool experience. The track feels and looks really old, but the venue itself, the concession stands, like, it's not state of the art, but it's not falling apart like a local short track either. You know what I mean? It's somewhere in the middle. So I think you're going to enjoy it.
I was just speaking on Monday with track president Kerry Tharp for my column this week on Front Stretch. And and he told me, I like to tell people it's not the fanciest place you'll ever see a race. It's definitely not the most modern feel, but it's probably the coolest place you'll ever see a NASCAR race. And so I'm looking forward to that and really experiencing that vibe.
So let's talk playoffs a little bit. I'll ask you point blank. Can anybody beat Kyle Larson?
Can they? Yes. Will they? I don't think so. Kyle Larson, especially in the last, so he missed obviously the majority of last season, wasn't able to participate in last year's playoffs. Mm-hmm. He went to the round of eight in 2019 after winning at Dover. Now, Dover's not in the playoffs this time around. But when you look at this playoff schedule, I think it really does fall into Kyle Larson's hands. Phoenix is a good track for him. Now, you have to get to Phoenix to really matter there. And that round of eight, Texas, Kansas, Martinsville. I don't necessarily look at any of those three tracks and say that Kyle Larson is a favorite in any of those three, but I look at what he's done this season, especially on the mile and a half tracks, and Kansas is probably going to be his best bet to get there. He's notoriously been not a contender at Martinsville, and that was a talking point even in 2019 after he won at Dover. But Kyle Larson, I still think, even though he's kind of lost some momentum over these last couple of weeks, he hasn't won since, by Kyle Larson's standards, this is a losing streak. It's been three races now. I don't think he has a ton of momentum on his side, but I still think he's got to be the guy that everyone is focusing on, especially considering he just won the regular season championship.
See, my thing is, I think he's the favorite for the championship for obvious reasons, and if you made me pick, I would pick him, no-brainer. But we've seen that while playoff points help, and he's got 15 extra from winning the regular season title, while playoff points help, they don't matter. Like, they really don't. You saw Harvick last year, didn't even get to the championship four, even though he had a barrage of playoff points. You saw Denny Hamlin also have a ton of playoff points. He got to Phoenix, but he was a non-factor that day, so didn't matter. He didn't win the championship. So even though Larson is the favorite to get there and the favorite to win, I still can't say with certainty that he's going to. Because, I mean, if last year didn't happen, I would say, oh, yeah, he's a lock. Don't worry about it. But I don't know. And I think Larson's probably approaching it the right way. He said, you know, I don't really care or pay attention to what happened to Harvick last season. All we got to do is do our thing. But you see Ryan Blaney's coming in hot right now. I'm not going to bet against Kevin Harvick. I mean, I know that their team and he right now, like, they're not what they once were. But who's to say if SHR has found something or they're hiding something or Harvick's going to turn on the afterburners and potentially make a round of eight run? I don't know. And that's why I think the playoffs are so unpredictable and so fun, because you really don't know what's going to happen. I mean, you can say there's probably a handful of drivers that won't make it past the first round. You know, you look at Michael McDowell, you look at Eric Almirola, you can maybe throw some other drivers in there depending on what you think. But I just don't know if I would feel comfortable like putting money on Larson to win the championship. To get to Phoenix, I'd feel comfortable with that. But once you get there, all bets are off, because it's about who's best on that day. And as we talked about at length, that's just a product of this format. Playoff points help, but they're not the end-all be-all.
Right, and I think Hendrick Motorsports is probably a little bit, if it's more vulnerable at any style of racetrack, I think it's the 750 tracks. Easy for me to say. So I think Ford has, I don't want to say an advantage, but they're more likely in play on the 750 racetracks. Same thing with Joe Gibbs Racing. Chevy pretty much has the 550 package down. But when you look at this first round, you've got 3 750 horsepower racetracks. When you look at the next round, you've got a road course and you've got a super speedway and you've got a mile and a half track. That one's kind of volatile.
But the thing is, the round of eight has 2 550 tracks, right? So if Larson can get a win there, then he's already in. So it all depends on how it sets up. And also, but what you see too, like, you could have freak stuff happen. You could have a rain shower come in, NASCAR throws the green, you hit the wall, a la Kevin Harvick, and you have a bad day. And then you go to Martinsville, and you miss the setup, and you have a bad day. And what happens? You have to try to wreck somebody in front of you to get in. And that's totally not in his DNA, not in Larson's either. So even if you have freak deals happen to you in back-to-back weeks, and you're running well, and you're leading laps, it doesn't matter. Because it's all about what happens at certain times. It's all circumstantial, which is infuriating for a driver in some respects, but is very entertaining from the fans' perspective. It's a catch-22, Zach.
It really is. And look at these cutoff races. The cutoff race for the first round, Bristol. Cutoff race for the second round, Charlotte Motor Speedway, Roval. And then cutoff round for round of eight, Martinsville. Anything can happen there. You can use the bumper at any of those three racetracks. How about it?
Yeah. Give me your championship four picks. I'll give you mine first.
Please.
I know it's hard. I'm going to go 2 Hendrick and 2 Gibbs. Okay. Larson, Chase Elliott, the defending champion. He obviously is really good at Martinsville. He won last year. Kyle Busch, I think he's coming on strong. And I went back and forth between Blaney and Martin Truex Jr., but I gave the edge to Truex because I think Martinsville is a really strong place for him. And even though he's shown that if he needs to rough somebody up to get a win, I don't think he will. Like, I don't think that's in his DNA. But I do think that he's going to be running well enough to either win that race, contend for the win, or be in a position where he doesn't necessarily need to. He's just got to run pretty well. Plus, by the way, JGR, I mean, they're no slouch on the 550 tracks either, right? I mean,
no.
Texas and Kansas, they're not the best tracks that they have, especially for the 19 team, but that's something that I'm going to be watching, because if Truex is able to get to Phoenix, we obviously know he won there earlier this year, that could be one to watch. So I'll go Truex, Kyle Busch, Larson, and Chase Elliott as my final four.
I'm not going to differ too much here. Larson's in my final four. Kyle Busch is in my final four. I think he's actually got a little bit more momentum than people are talking about right now. I like Kyle Busch here. I want to say Elliott. Just because he's proven that he's been, you know, he's more capable now than ever. And I think the numbers this year are even better than where he was last year. So I'll say Elliott. And give me Denny Hamlin. I know he's not putting up crazy numbers. I know he's still winless.
Hey, that's a hot take.
It is. But I think Denny Hamlin has actually been running better than Truex. I think he's been more consistent than Truex. I haven't looked at the numbers to back that up, but I like Denny Hamlin, especially the experience that he brings with him into this playoff run, going through the round of eight. I feel like maybe his best is yet to come this year. And so because of that, I'll go Larson, Elliott, Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin.
Checkered flag, here I come. Oh, no!
Checkered Flag is out on the podcast this week, Zach. You know how we do this. Before we get into our picks and we make the people some Monet as we gamble responsibly, we got to do our do's and our don'ts. And you have your zoo and your zones. So I'll go first real quick. We'll make it quick and painless for all the people this week. My do is to expect Tyler Reddick to surprise some people. You remember last year in the playoff opener, or not the playoff opener, but it was at Darlington. Austin Dillon almost grabbed a victory out of Kevin Harvick's hands. He finished second. RCR clearly has got something at Darlington, and I think that they may have that in Tyler Reddick this year because he's going to be ripping the top in that 750 package. You know he's going to be one to be reckoned with. So expect Tyler Reddick to run well in front of some of the other playoff contenders. And my don't is to get mad if you see another ass whooping, whether it's by Truex, whether it's by Denny, whether it's by Larson, anybody. Darlington in the 750 package, it's a long, grueling, hot race. But we've seen that ass whoopings, as Truex called it, can happen and will happen. So don't get mad necessarily if you see that because I kind of told you so. Zach, what is your zoo and your zone, my friend?
The zoo. Do expect people like Truex and basically expect the Toyotas and the Fords to contend with the Chevrolets on a super competitive basis this weekend at Darlington. You're going to see a lot of guys like Truex, like Kyle Busch. I think you'll see the Penske cars running up toward the front this weekend because it's a 750 race. The zone, the don't. I don't think we're going to see a ton of Darlington stripes this weekend. I don't remember seeing a bunch back in the spring. I feel like the drivers are getting a little bit better. We also don't know what to expect with that repaved patch in turn two and what that how that's going to impact the race. I just don't really expect a ton of Darlington stripes this weekend.
Fair enough. Let's make some bets. Let's make the people some money. You guys know how this works. Odds courtesy of Caesars Sportsbook in association with William Hill. Head-to-head driver matchups. Who will finish higher? Quick, rapid fire. Zach, are you ready?
I'm so ready.
All right. First matchup, Kurt Busch versus Tyler Reddick.
Reddick.
I will go Reddick as well. Second matchup, Eric Almirola versus Matt DiBenedetto.
Matty D.
Okay, I'll go Matty D too. Chase Elliott and Kevin Harvick.
Chase Elliott.
I agree. Ryan Blaney versus C-Bell.
Blaney.
I agree. He's got the mo. Austin Dillon and Ross Chastain.
Ooh. Chastain.
I'll give it to Austin because he ran really well at Darlington last year. Willie B and Alex Bowman.
Byron.
Yeah, me too. Bowman's struggling big time. He's got to get some good runs on his side. Penske duo, Brad Keselowski versus Joey Logano.
I like Brad more here.
I like Joey a little bit. I think it may be lame duck time for Brad. Denny Hamlin versus Kyle Busch, two of my final four picks, or two of your final four picks.
At Darlington, Denny Hamlin.
Yep, I'll go Denny as well. He's running the Xfinity race the day before, too, so that'll give him a leg up on that new asphalt patch in turn two. Chris Buescher versus Ricky Stenhouse Jr.
Give me Ricky.
Okay, I'll go Buescher just to be a little different. This will be a good one to watch. Larson versus Truex.
Ooh. Give me Larson.
I'll go Truex just to be a little different as well. All right, people, you heard it here first. We'll make you some money. Gamble responsibly. Gamble well. And if you need some more picks, check out all the fantasy articles that we're doing over at frontstretch.com. Zach, safe travels down to Charlotte and then safe drive through the speeding traps down to Darlington. I know it's going to be your first time there. It's going to be awesome for you to see that place in all of its glory. Treat the lady in black well for us on Front Stretch, okay?
I will do my best.
Thank you. That's all we ask of you. And that will wrap things up for this week's episode of the Front Stretch Podcast. Thank you for sitting with us at the best seat at the track. If you like what you heard, leave us a rating and a review. Subscribe to the podcast. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Google, anywhere you get your podcasts. We should be available there for your consumption. Enjoy Darlington this weekend. Fill out your playoff bracket. For Zach, I'm Davey, and everybody else here at Front Stretch. Enjoy the racing this weekend. And we'll catch you on the flip side.